Animal communication. It is such a blessing. And I'm ever so grateful that we have this ability to talk with animals. Did you know that no matter who you are, or where you're from, or whatever you do, that you can communicate with our fellow furry, feathered, finned, or scaly soul friends? You really can. And one thing that I have found that as a communicator with animals is that my technique and style might be different from another communicator. And guess what? That's what makes this so interesting. Because everyone who does this, they bring their own unique gifts to the table. And then of course, the animals, they bring their guidance to us in magnificent ways. In this particular episode, you will hear me talk with a fellow animal communicator. Her name is Jeannie Joseph, and she's pretty amazing. We're going to discuss the unique qualities that she brings to our world, as well as some really interesting aspects of the human-animal bond. So keep listening to learn just how unique an animal's journey is and become fascinated with the gifts and the learnings that are shared. This episode promises to be engaging and fascinating. So let's keep going. I'm so excited to share Jeannie's wisdom with you. Hi, everybody. It's Mary Beth Haynes, and I'm the gal who speaks with animals and the host of the Awaken with Animals podcast. Awaken with Animals is a collection of inspiring channelings from the animals themselves and messages of guidance from them, those that we call our friends. Anything from the journey of healing to the celebrations of life, there's an animal who has a story to tell, a lesson to teach us, and a gift to provide to us all. This podcast promises to bring you uplifting inspiration and divine loving guidance. So be prepared to be amazed at just how profoundly deep an animal's message can be, why they are here to assist humanity, and to learn just how many blessings they have to share with you. It is my heart's intention that as we awaken with animals, we will activate a deeper and meaningful life. Hi, everybody. It's Mary Beth Haynes, also known as the gal who speaks with animals. And I'm really glad you're here. You know why? Because I'm really excited to share with you in this particular episode a conversation that I had with a wonderful woman named Jeannie Joseph. Jeannie is a fellow animal communicator, and she's from Tucson, Arizona. We had a chat, and this chat was very enlightening for me. It was something that, as a communicator myself, I was able to learn so much from Jeannie, and I think you will be able to too. Sharing our experiences as communicators with animals was something that I really enjoyed. And one of the things that I found at the end of the conversation is, you know what, Jeannie and I might actually do some work together, which was really cool because this particular conversation that you're going to hear us was our very first time talking together. So Jeannie and I have never met. We've never we talked maybe 4 minutes before we got into the actual show itself. And I just had such a great time. So there's a couple things that I just wanted to share with you before we get right into this conversation with Jeannie. And number one is her book. Her book is called The Human-Animal Connection, and it's all about deepening relationships with animals and ourselves. What I really find cool about her book is that she, and I share it, you'll be able to hear it more, but I share it in the episode, but I find that she has divided her book up into three parts. So part one is all about how to be a better human for your animal. Part two is what animals can teach us about being a better human. And then part three is all about the spiritual connection. So Jeannie actually covers every aspect. She covers it from what I like to call the surface level with animals, and then she goes deeper and she covers how to communicate with animals, and she gives strategies and stories, and she backs it up with resources. There's just a ton of information in this book that is amazing. And then when she gets into the spiritual connection, she actually assists us on how we as humans can be of service to animals, because they do so much for us, don't they? They really, really do. So let me just share with you a little bit about Jeannie, and then let's get right into this conversation. So Jeannie Joseph, PhD, she's the executive director of the Human-Animal Connection. The Human-Animal Connection partners with animals to create joy, healing, and profound connections. They offer free therapy dog visits to veterans, active duty, healthcare providers, and anyone who's experiencing stress in the field of service to others. They go into schools and they present educational classes and Zoom sessions to help people deepen their connections to animals, to increase their empathy, and to facilitate cross-species communication. There's a program that's called Canines Teach Compassion, and it's what they do in the high school, and it combines social skills and resilience training with animal interactions in the students. It's pretty amazing. Jeannie is an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker. She's a creator of the Act Resilient Method, and she's authored the book by that same name. And then, of course, she's got her newest book, The Human-Animal Connection. Act Resilient, that's the program that works with therapy animals, and it's been presented to over 4,000 service members and their families. And for this work, Jeannie actually received President Obama's Volunteer Service Award. I'm really, really excited to share this time together with Jeannie with you all. And I have included her information in the show notes, so be sure to go there and check out her website, check out her book. And if there's anything that you feel Jeannie can do for you, reach out to her, and I'm sure she'll be delighted to hear from you. And lastly, reach out to me. Let me know what you think of this episode and if there's anything I can do to be able to support you or to connect you with Jeannie even further. Just let me know. All right, let's get into this conversation with Jeannie Joseph and let's have a great time. Here we go. So Jeannie, thank you so much for being a part of this episode of Awaken with Animals. We actually have just been talking for 4 minutes. It hasn't been very long. And I just wanted to, first of all, thank you for coming on. I would just love to get to know you better. And I know that the listeners would love to get to know you better as well. And just if you are listening to this on the podcast, we are recording it as well. So we're here in video. So if you hear us talk or say, you know, I'm showing you this or that kind of thing, it's because we also have the video aspect here as well. But I think, you know, as we kind of get into it, I just want to welcome everybody here. Welcome back to the Awaken with Animals podcast. And, you know, if you're new and you're listening to this for the first time, a warm welcome to you. I really want to extend that forward. And if you've been here for a long time and we've been together through all these episodes, I want to thank you for coming back. Awakening with Animals is something that has been such a pivotal time and experience in my life. And being able to share that with you just brings me a lot of joy. So thank you for being here. And so Jeannie, you know, we're here to talk about who knows what. We're here to talk about your book, but because this is kind of an organic conversation, we're going to see where things are going to lead us.
Sure.
So why don't we talk about you first? Why don't we kind of get to know you better? Because like I said, now we've been talking for 6 minutes? We've met before now. And so, you know, I'd love to get to know you better. And I know that everybody listening or watching this would too.
Well, thank you for having me on. And thank you to your listeners who care about animals, love animals, and want to go deeper in their connection. So my name is Jeannie Joseph, and I've written a book called The Human-Animal Connection, and that is based on our 33 principles and our mission to change the way humanity relates to animals. So we are very interested in helping people. I know your audience is so awake and so aware of the potential of really communicating with animals with a profoundness that is really just awe-inspiring every day, you know, when we do it, just when we enter the world of animals and we hear something that they have to say or they are able to hear us, it's really extraordinary experience. And we just want everyone to be able to have that experience. Everyone who wants to, I should say, you know, it's not a requirement, but for those who, you know, share their lives with animals and want to go deeper, it's so wonderful to have a method, you know, because I know when I was first starting, I was like, there were some people that were my mentors and I was just so in awe of them. And I thought, well, gosh, I could never do that. You know, I wish I could.
Right.
And then I, you know, discovered that with practice and with some good techniques, you can learn. And I really do believe that anyone with a sincere desire and a willingness to practice and patience can learn to communicate with animals. And animals, just like people, some are better communicators than others. Some are ready to talk the first time you meet them, and others need to understand that pathway. So, and some are more truthful in their communication. I've had a horse lie to me. not exactly lie, but present information in a way that was his point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was, yeah. That was a good lesson for me, because I realized that, you know, just because an animal says it doesn't mean it's, you have to carve it in stone. You know, you got to ask more questions and discover. But it's just been such a beautiful journey, and I'm so excited to help other people continue on their journey with this or explore it with even more depth. So that's what I'm all about. So my dissertation, my PhD dissertation, was on the human-animal bond for healing. And so it began when I was working with, I was teaching courses on the military bases, and I was working with soldiers with PTSD, including hospitalized soldiers with very severe cases. And I had this method that I had created called ACT Resilient. And it uses improv comedy and laughter therapy and expressive arts. And we were getting just phenomenal results with reducing the symptoms of PTSD in very short periods of time. But when I started bringing in the therapy animals, what I saw that they could do, I was like, oh my God, what this dog can do in 10 minutes. Why am I working so hard? Because it was just, I had this, I was volunteering at the sanctuary in Hawaii, and there was this dog that I rescued, and I named him Oscar. That wasn't his shelter name, but he had been through a terrible situation. He had been forced to be a wild pig hunter. They starve them to make them more aggressive. So he had scars all over his body, missing teeth. He had this really sad look. He was a pity mix. But he was just the sweetest, you know, even after what he had been through, he had this tenderness and this ability to read human emotions. So I could sit in a circle of soldiers, you know, where we'd be doing work, and Oscar would go around. He'd say hello to each one, but he would stop, and what we call an alert, he would sit right in front of the person and just who was in the most trouble, who needed the most help in that moment. And he would just gaze into their eyes until they melted. Nice. It was such a profound experience. I mean, everyone saw Oscar being nice to everyone, but to be chosen by a dog and for him to just look at you and just be, you know, willing to hold you in his presence and his love is just such a powerful experience. And soldiers who wouldn't talk or, you know, wouldn't engage would just get down on the floor and rub his belly and giggle and, you know, talk baby talk to the dog, to Oscar. Yeah. And it was such a beautiful thing to see. And so that really started me on this next leg of my journey, which was the human-animal connection, to really help people recognize the potential for our relationship. And it goes both ways, you know, how we can be better for the animals in our lives also.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When you were talking about Oscar and how he had been through that horrible trauma and all the things that had happened to him, and how he was able to bring that forward in his life experience in dog form as Oscar, and actually become not only a teacher for others in healing, but also a healer, you yeah. know, through what he went through, and being able to bring that forward and be able to It almost feels like he was able to fulfill, you know, or is fulfilling his purpose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is what he was doing. And, you know, when I first got him, you know, if I was eating dinner and I raised my arm near him, he would be scared. You know, he was so frightened at first. And that's where I really learned to refine some of my healing methods, was to help him recover from that. And it was a great lesson, because trauma is not the final answer. You know, trauma is a step in our journey. And I don't know anybody who gets through life without having some, you know, so it's part of the living experience. But the question is, how can we relate to trauma? Can we use that trauma as like mulch or like fertilizer?
Right. You know, yeah.
To spur growth, and to see Oscar and other dogs that I've worked with heal from that. It's not to say, I mean, he always had this sad look, which I think really worked, you know, right. You know, so, you know, it's not like he didn't have memory. I believe the animals have memory, but he was able to say, okay, I take my new reality over my old reality, and to make the choice to be someone who could heal others, which he was. I mean, he just touched everyone that he met, you know, even just walking through the hallways with the hospital with the doctors, and they would just, you know, just get down on their knees and be sweet. And just for them to have 10 or 15 seconds of this genuine connection revived them to go back and then deal with the next case that they had to deal with on the human side. So it's just a beautiful thing to see that circle of healing.
The circle of healing. I love it. Thank you, Oscar. Wow. That is Oscar. So beautiful. So beautiful.
Yeah. I can send you a picture of Oscar, but here he is.
Oh, what a beautiful boy.
Yeah.
So yeah. For those who are listening, I saw this beautiful, beautiful dog with, would it be like tan color? Mostly tan color. And then a white just down the center, going down his nose and down his face. Just such a beautiful, beautiful boy.
He was.
That's wonderful. You talked about working with that program, Act Resilient. Now you have a book on that as well, right? Because I was looking up that just the other day. And I find that how you said that, you know, you're spending hours and hours working and it's working with you know, humans who are going through PTSD, but bring in the animals and guess what happens? All of a sudden it just shifts and it goes in the same direction, but in a different way. And it happens so much faster.
Yeah, because it bypasses words. And, you know, words are a blessing as humans, but they're also our curse in the sense that, you know, we can get so caught up in the words and, you know, there's a place in therapy, of course, for talking, but there's also a place for just connecting. And what a dog does, a trained therapy dog meets you where you are. You know, the dog doesn't judge you and say, oh, you know, you didn't finish your degree or you didn't get this car or this house or whatever. You know, they don't care about the color of your skin or if you're injured. They see your essence, which is so beautiful because in real life, we don't often feel seen. You know, if we're lucky to be in a relationship where we feel seen, that's fantastic. But most of us feel a lot of unseenness in across the course of our life. And when you meet an animal who really just wants to connect, and I've seen it with horses and donkeys, it's not just dogs, it's cats. It's, you know, there are certain, maybe about, I'm just going to anecdotally say a number, 20% of animals really have this purpose. You know, other animals come in for other things and they're really here to have just a lovely play life. And that is just fine. There's nothing, it's not like one is better than another. But when you meet this 20% that is just somehow here to help, I guess is a word to use, and different animals help in different ways. You know, did you ever hear the story about Ricochet, the dog that was trained to be a service dog and flunked and became a surfing dog, help paralyzed children? Ricochet would do tandem surfing. Did you ever see that?
Okay. You know what? It's sounding a little familiar, but yeah, please tell us the story.
Well, Judy Fredona was a trainer, very experienced, and she would raise puppies from, I don't know if it was birth or 8 week, whatever it was, very early, and begin their training to become service dogs. So these are dogs that are bred for service. They are, you know, the right temperament, the right, all this, everything is working. And this dog was a puppy prodigy, like by the age of a few months could do everything, could open the dryer, pull the cord and open the dryer, could, you know, do all the commands that they had to do. I mean, just perfect, like a total puppy prodigy. She was so proud of this dog. And when Ricochet hit adolescence, she stopped. She didn't want to do any of her commands. You know, it was just like, you know, like a kid going, you know, going through this teenage
years. I don't want to do this anymore.
I don't want to do this. This is not my destiny. You know, and she started chasing birds. And so she was disqualified from service work and she was going to give the dog away because it wasn't going to meet the destiny that she had thought it was going to have for it. You know, and this is not uncommon in service work. Only about 2 out of 5 dogs or 2 or 3 out of 5 will actually end up being service dogs because of the rigors of the training and all this. But anyway, so she was going to give them away. And then she discovered she loved being on the surfboard in her pool. And she had this great balance. And she fortunately paid attention and realized that this was what she was designed to do. And she eventually was able to help paralyzed children go in the ocean for the first time in their lives and ride away, you know, in tandem, the dog and the child on the board. And, you know, they raised thousands of dollars to help kids with medical needs and so on. So, you know, it's just a beautiful story that this dog had an actual purpose and destiny that was different from what the humans thought, you know. Sometimes we think, oh, a dog is going to be great at this, and then it's not true. You know, like we're working with one therapy dog in who's in our high school program called Canines Teach Compassion. And this is a 7-year-old dog. So a 7-year-old dog should be mature, but this dog is like a puppy. I mean, just, you know, bouncing off the walls and, you know, quote unquote, if you look at him and say, well, he's not trained. He has bad behavior, whatever, because he's just very, you know, animated. And what we're discovering now about this dog, he has the ability to read energy that's pretty impressive. So what's interesting is he lives in kind of a rough neighborhood and he will pass certain homeless people and be, you know, either ignore them or be interested, say hello. Other homeless people, he will really have a reaction and bark. And his owner was really concerned about this. And I watched this and I could see, oh, the person, people who were reacting to had imbalanced energy. Like perhaps they had some entities or, you know, difficult spirits that were kind of messing with them, unfortunately. And the dog was really reacting very, very specifically to people with some serious energetic and psychic imbalances. And which of course, you know, could contribute to their homelessness. It's a sad situation. But what was interesting is we're beginning to notice his skill set, which is very profound. You know what I mean? It's at a very high level, even though his other behaviors are, or you might say problematic or, you know, difficult for the owner to deal with his, you know, unruliness at other times. But it's a matter of really discovering what is his true purpose. And so we're in a process of discovery. And I keep telling her, let's not. And she says, well, he could do this and he could do that. I said, well, let's not impose. Let's just let it emerge. Let's just keep observing. Let's see what he shows us. And if you do that, you can discover what your animal's unique purpose is. And almost every animal, when I work with a client in, you know, doing individual consultations, if the client is interested in knowing, I'll ask what their purpose is. Sometimes they just tell me because they know I'm interested. But it's so unique and it's so specific to each animal. And it isn't always like, well, I'm going to cure cancer or something like this. You know, I mean, they just have they're here for a reason. Usually. And sometimes it's just to help the human, you know, sometimes it's what they're helping one person. Sometimes they're doing more work. Sometimes they're working energetically. I have a lot of animals I work with who are like here and now, but they're also involved in spiritual realms and they're working at different levels.
Yes. Yes. And that I think is coming more and more. I don't know if the word is apparent or more and more like, you know, let's go back 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. Would we really be looking at the spiritual aspect of our relationship with dogs? Maybe we would, but in my life experience 20 years ago, 25 years ago, it was very different. And I felt that it was more surface level communication.
Yeah.
Right. And then now, like, especially like, I can't tell you how many clients that I work with and their animal will bring through something on the spiritual aspect. And it has to do with, you know, their purpose and why they're here. And a lot of times I find that the animals want whenever I get pulled down. So when I feel this, you know, if an animal pulls me back, they're taking me somewhere in the past. When an animal pulls me down, I feel like they're taking me to a deeper level. I'm no longer surface with them. I'm going down to more to a soul level, you know, kind of communication. And I find that a lot of blessings and really assisting with the root of why some of the things that they're doing, you know, some of the behaviors, and remembering that every behavior is a communication. So, you know, even if they're choosing to do something, they're doing it because they're really feeling a certain way about something. So there's always that bigger picture, that underlying thing that is beyond words. And so it's kind of working with them on that way. And especially through trauma, I'm finding that the animals that have experienced a lot of trauma that has come, or let me back up, the animals that are experiencing behaviors have a lot of trauma as roots of these behaviors.
Absolutely.
And then when you can kind of find out more on that spiritual level, that is where I find that the bond and the connection between, you know, animals and humans deepens, because it's not only healing for the animal, because once the animal is able to share, this is why I'm doing this. This is, you know, once we get there, then the humans, when they start understanding, it's like they start synergistically merging together even deeper on a much more you know, deepening that relationship together. And so I just find it fascinating. And yeah, it's really fascinating. And so you do a lot of work through trauma with animals, et cetera, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I learned a lot of my methods by volunteering with shelter dogs who were shy and traumatized. So that was sort of my specialty, was dogs who are what we call pancake dogs. They're just like laying flat, as flat and low to the ground as they can be. They don't even want to treat. They don't want to connect. And, you know, we go in as humans, oh, I want to help this dog, I want to heal this dog. But, you know, what do they need is really the question, you know, and what is it going to, I can't just go in and give them a great energy or something. It's, you know, they may not be ready for it. So there's a process of learning how to work what we call at their pace, meaning it's not about, I have an agenda. I want this dog to be this big old happy dog, you know, because the problem with these shy dogs in the shelter is that people walk by and they see a dog cowering in the corner. They just walk on by because they don't want to, of course, they don't want to scare the dog. They don't want to make it worse because they can see dogs afraid of people and they just, and so these dogs get passed up. And these are often great dogs who've had trauma, who need time and help and good methods to come out and heal. And so it's a whole process that I go through, and to help a dog that is not able to connect, doesn't make eye contact, doesn't, you know, maybe afraid of being touched, won't even take a treat. There's a whole process, a sequence I go through in my book to help dogs like that come out and heal. And I've seen dogs like all the dogs that I've worked with have been adopted in the shelters. And these were all dogs that really had no chance in terms of how they presented behaviorally, because they couldn't make eye contact and they couldn't come up to the gate of the kennel and connect with a person. And those are the dogs that I just, you know, what I would say to people who were adopting, I'd say, well, why'd you pick that dog? You know, there's 200 in the shelter, you know, and they'll say, invariably, they'll say, oh, it's the way he looked at me. I couldn't leave him there. And I said, okay, right. We need to teach these dogs how to make eye contact with people. Yeah, you know, that is, after they learn sit, the next thing they need to learn is what we call focus in our program in the Canines Teach Compassion, because it relates to the human thing, which is basically what you focus on, you get more of. So focus on good, you get more good, right? So we use the word focus, but people can use the word look. We put a treat right at the top of our nose, right between our eyes. The second the dog looks at us, they get a treat. And once they learn that, and we're not using any word at this point because that word doesn't mean anything. Once they learn it, then we're going to just slow it down a little bit. Like they have to look at us for 2 seconds now, and then they get the treat. And once they have, you know, a couple of seconds in duration, we're not talking about minutes or hours, but just, you know, getting it to maybe 10 seconds is great for a dog because it calms their nervous system to have focus, just like it does for us. Yes. And so then what we do is once they're learning that, then we're going to add the word focus, and we use the same tone of voice each time. And then what we do once they've learned the word is now we're going to start delivering it slower. So the time it takes my hand to go from my forehead right before their nose is slower. And what this does, it creates positive anticipation. So negative anticipation is no fun, but positive anticipation is actually the antidote to fear. So this is one of the ways that we can retrain the nervous system to go towards what feels good and to let go of what doesn't. And that is a very powerful thing. And just getting a dog to be able to say, oh, human equals treat, look them in the eye, get love. You know, it's not natural for many dogs, unless they raised in a human home, to do eye contact. It can be scary because in the natural world, sustained eye contact can be a sign of aggression. That could be a bite could be next, you know, so they have to learn that human eye contact is a good thing and desirable thing. And it works because when we gaze into each other's eyes, we get a little jolt of oxytocin, the feel-good hormone, you know. And so for them to learn that is life-changing. So people who are volunteering in the shelter, if you can teach those dogs to do that, that's a really good thing.
Oh, that's just beautiful. That is just beautiful. In your book, I'm going to hold it up here because I have a copy.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And I've been reading it and it's, well, I'll share a little bit of kind of on my experience with it so far in just a second, but your book is called The Human Animal Connection and it's deepening relationships with animals and ourselves. And so in it, just with what you were talking about, how it's, you were just explaining about, you know, that process, right? And how you're helping the dogs with that eye contact. And I remember reading a part in your book where it's kind of teaching us as humans, to be able to understand an animal better based on, I'm going to put it in my words and let me know if I've understood this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of times when we think about communicating with animals, we think, oh, we got to hear them, right? You're talking to animals because that's the language we use, right? We say, oh, you know, communicating with animals, talking with animals. Okay, well, you're talking to your animal and you think you should be able to hear something, whether it's energetically or, but it's much more subtle than that. It could be something as subtle as a thought, a feeling, you know, a picture that comes up in your mind or that type of thing. And so in your book, you actually show us ways that we can listen to our animals. And again, I just used my own words. These aren't the words that you necessarily have used in your book, but to be able to, like, you have a whole section on the communication aspect with animals and ways that we can hear them through silence and all yes. of that, right? Do you want to share a little bit more about that?
Yeah. It's great what you said about the last 20 years, you know, because there has been a revolution in animal science. You know, the scientists are catching up to us, and Dr. Gregory Burns taught his dogs to go into an MRI machine so they could chart their brain through different emotional responses in an awake dog, which we've never had before. And this has showed us that not only do dogs have emotions, but the emotional structures in their brain are very similar to where a human is. So like human anger, you know, is the same as dog anger, is the same as dog happiness, is the same as dog anticipation, human anticipation. So the science is catching up to what the visionaries have known all along, or let's say the Native Americans who have always believed that you could communicate with all animals and plants and that was not anything extraordinary. That was just normal. Mm-hmm. You know, that was something that they could do. So the world is definitely changing. And yes, you're right. Every animal communicator, I think, communicates differently. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just as humans, just as you and I have differences in our styles and the way we communicate, you know, every person does, every animal does. So there are differences in how they communicate, and there are differences in on the human side, how we receive. So some people may receive words as we're talking just right now, complete sentences, you know, grammatical syntax. Other animals will communicate in images, like you say, others in feelings, others in energy, others in images. So there's just lots of ways that animals communicate. And as a communicator, you may find that you're good in one way particularly, but it's, you know, all ways are good. Any way that works is a good way. There's no one right way to do it.
That's right. And I think we often can become hard on ourselves when it's not happening in the way that we think expect it to happen. And I think too, I find a lot of times, if I'm taking a class in anything and I find that somebody else is grasping it faster than what I feel I should be, because I have these expectations that I put on myself, all of a sudden that part of, you know, that inner part of my mind says, well, why aren't you getting this in the same way? Or why aren't you, you know? And I think the point that you said is like, we all can do this. Regardless of whether we do it or not, we all have the ability to do it. It's not something that, you know, you need to have a certain, I don't know, special
psychic ability or something.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We all can do this. It's finding out what's going to be the best way for us.
Right.
We all learn in different ways. Right.
Right.
I'm very kinesthetic. So if I can, you know, actually do it and experience it and touch and feel it as I'm, you know, putting something together, then I'm going to learn it much more than watching somebody put something together kind of thing.
Exactly.
So, you know, whereas somebody else might, you know what? No, just let me watch you do it. Yeah. Visual. Perfect. Got it. And away they go. And I think it's the same way with when we connect in with our animals. And I think there's another aspect to it too, is that sometimes, and you talk about the silence, you know, in your book, and sometimes when we can get into that silent aspect, that's when all of a sudden this door opens for more information to be able to come through in a much more understandable way.
Right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the biggest obstacle in learning animal communication, and I can tell you this from direct experience, but the biggest obstacle is doubt, self-doubt, you know, not believing that we can do it or not believing that it's possible. And once that, you know, you have enough experiences under your belt that you can maybe talk to the human and say, is that true? Is that what's going on? You know, and they go, yeah, you know, how could you possibly known that? And you know, that begins to create a counter narrative to the doubt, because it's in our culture, we're taught, you know, as children knows, you know, you can't, that's imagination, you're just making it up, you know, stop that or whatever, you know, whatever injunctions we had against doing this kind of work. Many children feel they can talk to animals until they're taught that that isn't the case, you know.
Exactly. So,
you know, and in cultures where they're raised to believe that you can communicate with animals, they do. So, you know, it's just part of our acculturation that we have to sometimes develop our own personal body of evidence. So I say to people, you know, don't believe me, try it for yourself, you know, see what you can discover. And when we, when students are learning with me, and we'll talk to the same animal, and I'll say, so what'd you hear? And it's clear to me when they heard, you know, accurately, meaning neutrally, meaning what the animal actually said, not their own personal projections, then I can help them say, yeah, that's exactly right. Or, you know, maybe, or, you know, help them guide them along so they can feel the difference between what our own thoughts feel like. So when I talk about silence, I'm not just talking about that your lips aren't moving. I'm talking about that your mind is peaceful. So it's that full body silence, that complete surrender to the all that is. Do you know what I mean? That's where communication is, you can't stop it because it's just going on. All animals are communicating all the time. It's just, you know, are we listening? Are we feeling? Are we seeing? Are we perceiving? And one of the things we say in the human-animal connection you were talking about earlier about behavior, we say that all behavior is an attempt to either feel safe or connected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that really takes the pressure off of the good, bad behavior. Like we were talking about with Bailey, that dog that was kind of unruly, but really has these very sophisticated sensors, is that his behavior is an attempt to manage the energies that he feels. And so it becomes very kind of boisterous energy, you know, big energy, jumping and, you know, making noise and moving around. He's always in motion, yes. You know, but it's because he's navigating these energies. And now what we're teaching him is we're showing him, because sometimes animals have to learn, especially if they've been through some rough circumstances, they have to relearn how to get peaceful, how to get calm. And we actually have to teach the nervous system, oh, here's where peace is, you know, here's how you, and then once they learn it, they can start to do it themselves. And Bailey will start to, now that's the dog I was talking about, will start to self-soothe when, you know, he's in a group of people now, which he didn't used to do before. He had to attend to everything, you know, and now he can kind of attend a little for a moment and then soothe. So he can lay down and everybody, oh, what a good dog he is now. You
know? That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Way to go, Bailey.
Yeah, it's still a work in progress, but it's really extraordinary to see, because people had a lot of judgment when they met him. You know, we allowed him to come to class. He had been through our training program, the therapy dog training program. He hadn't yet taken the test or been certified because we didn't feel he was ready. But fortunately, in our program, we're allowed to bring dogs in training to the classroom. They allow us, which is fantastic, because mm-hmm. we're teaching the kids how to learn to evaluate dogs and how to recognize stress levels in dogs and how to evaluate whether this would be a good therapy dog. So Bailey in class was like the troublemaker, you know what I mean? Like the one that's always in trouble, too big, too loud, too much motion. Right. The dogs are all sitting calmly being petted. Bailey is like this movement machine, you know? And what was great is that we also teach the kids about, like you said, everybody learns a little differently. So we teach the dog to jump through a hoop, which is not a natural thing. You put up a hoop, dog doesn't think you should jump through it, right?
Right.
And we also teach them to go through a tunnel. And so Sophia, my dog, who's been in class for a long time, she will show first. So she'll jump through the hoop, or she'll jump through the tunnel, run through the tunnel, get the tree to the other end. Kids are all cheering them on, you know, learning how to motivate different dogs differently. And then it's Bailey's turn. He walks up to the tunnel and he runs around it. You know what I mean? And everybody laughs because all the other dogs have gone through and he goes around. But it's his intelligence to say, wait, there's a more efficient way. I don't have to go through this tunnel. I can go all the way around and get the tree.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
And it shows the kids that the so-called wrong behavior, bad behavior, not going through the tunnel when the other dogs did, is his unique intelligence, his way of approaching it. And so it really helps the kids understand that for themselves. And we also teach them that every dog is motivated a little differently. Some dogs will do anything for a treat. You know, mm-hmm. all you have to do is have that treat and they'll do whatever you want. You can teach them to do crazy things, they'll learn it all for a treat. Other dogs, that would be for affection, for your positive attention or for your petting. Other yeah. dogs, like military working dogs, it's all to play with a Kong. They'll go find a bomb and the reward is they get to play with their favorite toy.
Right.
You know, and so each dog is motivated a little differently. Many dogs are treat motivated, but not all. And the dogs that aren't treat motivated, you really want to understand what it is that excites them. And so we help the kids understand that, and then they understand, well, what motivates you? Is it, do you need outer approval? Do you need inner approval? Do you need to give yourself rewards like a break? Or, you know, what is it that gets you to do your homework? You know, how can you self-motivate? So, yeah.
Oh, I wish that when I went to school, we had that.
I know. Right? I wish I had it too.
Bless you for, and the animals for coming in and doing this with children, and for the work that you do with survivors of PTSD and with all of that, the therapy work that you do. You sent me a picture of Sophia.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Sophia.
Yeah. Well, I was living in Hawaii. I've been there 25 years, and I had to move. So came to Tucson, and I had a friend here, and they rented me a room in their house, and they had only one rule: no animals. So I had moved from Hawaii to Tucson. And I was volunteering at the shelter, and my one rule was I couldn't bring any animals home. Right. So there was this one little white thing, and she had a cone that was like twice the size of hers, and she was being led by this shelter worker. I should say led, dragged by the shelter worker, because she was being transferred from one shelter to another.
Right.
And I was standing there watching, and she took one look at me and leapt from the ground right into my chest with the trust that I would catch her, which I did.
Oh my gosh.
So long story short, you know, I had to get an apartment,
right.
Go find an apartment, because I had this dog. So she was a feral dog. She had been in several shelters, and to put it mildly, she scared grown men. Like when I was living in this apartment complex, the maintenance workers, when they saw us coming, they would make a, you know, circle wide berth and get leave us alone. Because she was put up such a, you know, especially men in uniform, because I guess she'd been captured. So she was really wild, and it took a while. You know, it was a year before she even played with toys. But she is the sweetest, most gentlest. I mean, she does hospice visits. She works with teenagers, she works with, you know, just about anybody. She just is incredibly peaceful. It's impossible not to feel peaceful in her presence. She's
right.
Very sweet and wonderful. So yeah, she has just really helped me understand the world of therapy dog work and therapy animal work. And she's just been a great teacher for me and a great, great love.
Oh, she sounds so beautiful. So
yeah.
Beautiful. And how she leapt right up into your chest. That just,
yeah.
Oh,
the absolute trust that I would catch her, you know?
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, it's like,
How beautiful. How beautiful. You know, it's just amazing. I don't know.
Can I tell you one funny story about Sophia, just because it sort of relate to what we were talking about before about
The
different ways that animals learn. So I was on a therapy dog visit. I'm part of Alliance of Therapy Dogs, a national organization, and I met this other little dog, a tiny little thing, like one of these little teacup things, you know, little cute little thing. And she had taught her dog to, you know, those little bells, like when you, like a service bell, when you go into a store and you just tap on the bell and they ding. So she had taught her dog to this little thing to tap on this. The bell was about half the size of her. And tap the bell and get a treat, right? So I thought, oh, this is so cute. The kids liked it. I thought, I'm going to teach my dog to do that. And I ordered one of same bell that she had, right?
Right.
Ordered this bell and brought it to class without teaching. I wanted the kids to learn how to teach. So we brought it right into the classroom and said, we're going to teach Sophia to ring this, to put her, you know, press the bell and get a treat, right? Because she'll do anything for a treat. And so we start doing it, ring the bell, and she backs away. And then I give her a treat, but she's not liking this bell, whatever it is about the sound. I don't know what it's, if it's too loud or it's the particular frequency, but the bell scares her, even though I put treats on it, near it, around it. And I finally said, you know what? She doesn't like this trick. This is, I'm going to put this, they're all in my bin in the closet now, because she doesn't like the sound of it, you know, and this other little tiny dog did it just perfectly. It was so cute. I wanted Sophia to do it too, but it's important to recognize that this is not fun for her. Whatever the sound is about that bell, I don't know why, but you know, it's not fun. So I have to find another trick to show, you know? And so that's part of it, is that my human expectation was, I thought I could show off with this great trick. You know, she salutes for the soldiers. She does lots of fun things, you know,
right.
But you know, she'll do sleepy time and fall over and go to sleep. You know, she does a lot of fun things, but I just thought this would be a fun portable one. And my ego, you know, I wanted it. Oh, I can teach her to do this, you know, and the trainers, oh, it's so easy to teach and bring a pal. You're sorry, right, right. You know, it was right. All the experts. But it was important for me to pay attention that, you know, it wasn't like she was terrified or anything like that, but when I would ring the bell, she would back up and I would give her a treat and then she'd come calling me, I'd ring the bell again and she would back up. And I said, this is in the human animal connection, we have a principle called towards and away. And what this principle is that a healthy being, human or animal, will move towards what's good, what feels good and what's safe, and will move away from what feels ungood or unsafe. Yes. And in a healthy animal, it works perfectly. But when an animal's been traumatized or a human's been traumatized, that gets interfered with. Our natural instinctual sense of towards and away gets interfered with. And so what happens, like on the human side, you have people who, you know, grew up in abusive households and they marry that same person. They marry the person who does the same pattern, you know, or they finally leave that person. They move across the country and they meet the person who has that same pattern because they're still attracted to that thing that is familiar, even if it's not good for them. And so when we override our, you know, we have to do this all the time in polite society. We're standing in line in the grocery store and there's someone who's got really angry energy right behind us. We can't necessarily get out of line. So we just put up with it and ignore it and whatever. But it affects us. And if we override that impulse of towards and away over the course of a lifetime, then we can't feel it. Then it doesn't work right. Like we get in a situation, somebody says, hey, this great thing, you know, buy this great thing. And we can't feel, no, this energy doesn't feel right. Or this person gives you advice, you should do this. We can't tell, oh, that's an expert in a white coat telling me I should do that. And so we've lost that connection with our natural sense of towards and away. Yes. But what's exciting about that is the minute we begin to pay attention to that, we can begin to bring it back online. And it can come, it doesn't take long. Very short for an animal and not too long for a human to be able to do that. And the way we do that is you have to really feel in your body. And like, you can't think about, oh, I think I should take this offer. You know, this looks right on paper, but how does it feel? You know, if your body's going, no, it's something really off about this. You know, I used to be in the movie business and sometimes a project looks so good on paper, but it just had this feeling of like something bad's going to happen here or something, right. You know, so. In fact, I had a cat when I lived in New York City and I was in the movie business and sometimes I wasn't sure which project to work and I'd put two scripts on the floor and let my cat choose which one. The cat would always sit on the better one. You know?
How cool is that? Yes, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's like, I didn't even know anything then. I didn't understand. I was fortunate to have met a very great animal communicator back in the 70s, I think it was. Samantha Curry, who was one of the very early animal communicators. She's amazing. But anyway, so I had some exposure to it, but I didn't believe I could do it myself. But I could tell, I knew to trust my cat that she could do it and he could do it rather. And so it was really amazing to see that. So what we want to teach people is that in the beginning of your animal communication practice, begin to pay attention to the towards and away signals of the animals who share your life or the animals you're meeting. Because they will tell you, if they're not traumatized, they will loud and clear, like some dogs, they just like you're walking, going for a walk, and they just want to meet that person, whoever that is. They just like, oh, this is dog person. I have to say hello. And other people, they're like, just not interested. And other people, they don't even want to be near, you know, so they have very clear reactions instantly to people. And I think that it's, of course, scent is a huge part of it, but not the only part of it. I think that they have a knowingness of who the dog loving people are, who the people are needs, if they're a therapy dogs often will, Sophia will go up, you know, cause she's also a service dog. She's my service dog. I have a brain injury and I'm hearing impaired. So I have, Sophia's learned to be my service dog. She hears for me things I can't hear.
Right.
And I have a brain injury. I can't always recognize faces right away. So she knows who my friends are.
Oh, how fantastic. Yeah.
So she'll sometimes go up to someone in a grocery store and she'll just sit with them, you know, just while we're doing the grocery shopping and she'll just sit with them. And it's just that one person, the whole store is just the one. She picked one person that she wanted to just have a moment with. And they're like, oh, you're so cute. You know, begins this whole cycle of goodness, you know, that goes on. So really fun, really fun.
That's amazing. That is amazing. And, you know, that part that you said that we can, you know, if something sounds right, so first of all, on you know, how Sophia does that and how she supports you that way and how an animal can know we all have, I like to call it the truth detector, right? Animals mm-hmm. have it. They know it, and it's yes. just natural for them. That's, you yes. know, there's no practice. They have it. Yeah. For us as humans, on the other hand, we tend to need a little bit more practice because of how yeah. we're taught and the way our society currently runs and things like that. But I always say our truth detector is kind of this box here that kind of goes around our chest area. And a lot of times if we were to say something like, okay, so I'm Mary Beth Haynes. So if I were to say my name is Mary Beth Haynes, what happens to this space? Feel into it, right? Yeah. Well, for me, it expands. But if I were to say my name is Joe Smith, it's automatically doing it because I'm so used to working with it this way. My name is Joe Smith. That's not truth. And therefore I feel a contraction in my chest. And mm-hmm. so it's really cool how we can, and how animals can actually help us mm-hmm. tap into this aspect to be able to know when something is true and when something maybe isn't, or maybe is the right way, or maybe not the right way, or maybe not right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just great, is to be able to watch the animals showing us their towards and away behavior. So sometimes away can be very dramatic, like the animal walking away, but sometimes it's subtler, like a head turn away or turning mm-hmm. the eyes away. So away can be subtle, especially if they're trained to, you know, try to please us. They're going to, you know, like, let's say you're petting them on autopilot and they've had enough. They could just kind of turn their head away. They're not going to leave necessarily because they want to be nice to us.
But it's still in a way.
It's in a way.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
so as you begin to notice that, and, you know, if you're out in the park, watch the birds, watch their towards and away, watch how they communicate with each other. You know, like they like if two birds are maybe squabbling over the piece of food or something and one bird turns away, that's a sign. Okay, I'm not going to fight over this. It's your
right.
piece, whatever.
Right.
You could just start observing it. If you have the opportunity to be around, you know, young children before they're too socialized, you know, 3 or 4, you'll see it, all this behavior too. So yeah. it's really a beautiful thing when, like you said, to get your truth box back online is to pay attention to your towards and away, you know, and there are many situations in life, especially now in this world, we so need our truth body. We so need, because there's so many people telling you this is the way it is, right? Or this is what's mm-hmm. what. And you have to feel into it and see, is that true? Maybe it's true for that person, but is it true for me? You know, so it doesn't have to be that we invalidate it, but it's like, it's not my truth. It doesn't yeah. feel right in my truth body. And there was this one horse that I was working with in this rescue. He was 40 years old. He was an amazing, you know, raised with all, he's in a beautiful place now, in a wonderful place. They treat him all holistically. Everything is so natural and healthy. And anyway, he's a very interesting guy.
Yeah.
And he will only talk to me if I'm at my highest level of consciousness. Like, he will not engage with me if I'm just in a chit chat mood. He's not going to talk, and he won't talk to me for months. And then I finally get myself into, you know, the best of my ability, this profound state, and he'll just tell me, you know, he'll talk. So he's trained me to really recognize the difference between what I think is calm and peaceful and what is actually calm and peaceful, you know, like he can tell the difference.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like training. He rewards good behavior. You know, he's trained me that this, so this is what real peace feels like. And, mm-hmm. you know, just being quiet is not enough. You know?
Right,
you can't fake it with a horse or any animal.
No, not at all. And you know, when your team reached out to me a few months ago when I had that neck injury. And so,
yeah.
When I was going through that, I really wanted to book this time together, but I couldn't at that time. So yes. when I let you know that and said, can you kind of give me till March or so to be able to get in, then it ended up taking me a bit longer, but here we are nonetheless.
Yeah.
You said that, yeah, no problem. And then you said, you know, that you were on your way to a workshop in working with donkeys, and you sent me this beautiful picture of you and this donkey. And it's called, what's it called again?
On Donkey Time.
On Donkey Time. So I wanted to ask you about that, because if I lived closer to you, I would
yeah.
be there at that workshop. I found it fascinating. Can you share more about what that's all about?
It's so fascinating. I love all animals, but there's a very special place for donkeys because just in terms of my personal history, right? Donkeys have been mistreated terribly, mm-hmm. you know, by humans. They have been perceived as stupid or stubborn, mm-hmm. all this negativity heaped on poor little donkeys, right? And the truth is that donkeys are motivated by self-preservation and goodness. So they move towards what is good and safe, and they will not move. They will not take one step. You can't make a donkey. I mean, of course, you can punish a donkey and force them. But if you're a kind person, you can't make a donkey do something they don't want to do. And so that is a very beautiful thing. So in this workshop, we're sitting in a circle, but lots of wide spaces between us. The donkey is free to come and go and weave and go to who he wants, see who he wants to. And this donkey is learning to be a very profound, you know, therapy donkey. And he can tell the difference between when people are really peaceful, just like Blue, that a horse I was telling you about, the 40-year-old horse. He can tell when people are really peaceful. So people are learning how to get peaceful. We teach them these methods, and then they see instantly. I call it donkey feedback, because he will go right to you. And sometimes we do things one-on-one where it's one person at a time. He will come right to you when you are basically peaceful, when you have let go of an agenda. Like if you have an agenda, oh, I want the donkey to come to me. He won't.
Right.
You know, I want the donkey to let me touch him. He won't. You know, it's only when you are completely like, I'm just here for you. You know, I love you. You know, I just want to be present. And he can't resist. Then he's like, you know, all over you and just wants to sniff you and cuddle and get so close and put his face right next to your face. And it's so sweet, you know, in these big, beautiful eyes. And to feel what it feels like, because it's instant feedback, you know. And sometimes I'll be sitting with him and then I'll go into some thought thing and he leaves, you know, just right, me and him right. And the thing, he'll just go off, you know. But when I get really peaceful, not only does he get completely peaceful with me, but all the other horses, even at ones that are 100 feet away, will turn and watch us. They'll just stand there and participate. Wow. And that shows me that it's really something energetically happening.
Yes.
Because I'm not directing my attention to them. They just feel the shift in the energy field, and it's instant. You know, the minute we all like, it's sort of like we click into a level of consciousness that's very, you know, loving and peaceful. And all the beings, even the birds, change their behavior when we're doing this workshop. So,
oh, it's amazing.
I hope someday I can have my own donkey.
yeah, for sure. And so you do this all in Tucson?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because there is listenership because I'm in Canada.
Yeah.
And so I'm near Niagara Falls. And but there are people from the States that do listen. And then, of course, there's people from, well, all over the world that listen to this that may be wanting to travel to the U.S. And so Arizona is a beautiful state. And
The land of cactus. Yeah. So it's, people, I do Zoom sessions for clients. So I'll work with people with their individual clients by Zoom, but they can come here and do workshops. We have private intensives. So lots of different ways that people can connect in. We have one person who moved from Oregon and one person who moved from Colorado because the work is so beautiful. This is really beautiful.
Yeah. And thank goodness for technology like this, right?
Yeah.
For Zoom and stuff, because it's so great to be able to connect pretty much anywhere. So you know, Jeannie, your book, The Human Animal Connection, you can see in the video here, I've got different parts, paper clipped and bookmarked and stuff like that. But I've been going through it, and I just would love to share how I have found this to be so helpful to me, but I also feel that this is going to be really helpful to my students and to, you know, the listeners and everyone, because I've had students, because I teach animal communication as well. And I often have students say, do you have any books that you recommend or things like that? Because they'd like to take it further, you know, between levels or things like that. And, you know, there's books that I can recommend in that, but to tell you the truth, I haven't found a book that covers everything that you cover in here.
Uh-huh. Mm.
And the way that you bring in not only your experience, you bring in specific animals and how they can bring into the topic that you're talking about. You also bring in other experts and resources, and you talk about what they've done or studies. So you always back up what you're teaching. So you're not saying, you know what, here it is and this is what it's about. You say, here it is and this is what it's about, but guess what? Here's somebody else's take on this. And here's, you know, this particular animal's take on this. And you really back everything up with the resources. And I love how you've sectioned it off into three sections. So it's kind of like how we can start to understand animals better and be better with the animals. And then how animals can help us become better people ourselves. You go into the spiritual aspect, you cover, you know, power animals and totems or spirit guides, and you go into animal communication, and you cover all the different aspects of what I feel is truly our relationship with animals. And I mean, the title, The Human-Animal Connection and Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves, you have given us a resource that we can, you know, the whole intention of this podcast, Awaken with Animals, it's an opportunity to activate a deeper and meaningful life with them together. Mm-hmm. This book kind of like seals that, and it brings it in a very tangible and strong way. So first of all, thank you for writing it.
Thank you.
This must have been a lot of work putting this together.
Yeah.
And where can people find this book?
Well, they can order it on Amazon or Barnes and Noble or anywhere they get their books. And they can also visit our website to get signed up for our free newsletter, because we do occasional Zoom classes and things like that. And maybe you and I can do something together on that. So with you,
I would
folks.
Love to. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So our website is no spaces, thehumananimalconnection.org. And there you can sign up for our free newsletter. And we have tons of blogs and tons of stories and all kinds of lots of videos. You can go to our YouTube video to see some of our Canines Teach Compassion videos and how we've helped dogs get wheelchairs and it's just really fun stuff. So it's all feel good stuff and lots of educational things. Yeah.
That's awesome. So again, it's humananimalconnection.org. And I was on
it's the human animal. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Thehumananimalconnection.org.
Thank you for correcting that. Thehumananimalconnection.org. And I was on your site as well. And you have lots of resources. There's lots of information to be able to learn more. I love how you're a trust technique practitioner.
Yes.
I have the course. I haven't finished it yet. I've been wanting to finish it for a long time. Yeah. I just have the first level. I don't have the actual practitioner yet.
That's
but
good.
It's amazing.
Amazing work. It's this. Yeah, I'm a trust technique practitioner. Couldn't get the words out. I use a lot of methods. I use Reiki, I use energy healing, I use T-touch, I use tapping. I use a lot of things, but the trust technique is really kind of the core of what I do. And that has to do with learning to get into this peaceful place, this quiet place where you can hear what animals want to say. You know, you learn how to enter into their world. And it's almost like those old time radios where you had the dials where you could tune and shift the button, you know, turn the button. So it's kind of like that. You dial into the frequency of horses or dogs or this dog or this horse. You know, it's all a little different. Sometimes you have to find where's that opening, where's that frequency, that wavelength that we can get into for a particular communication. But once we do, it's just amazing. And you can go back and talk to a horse that you haven't talked to in months, and you just pick up the conversation.
Yeah. Oh, love it. So Jeannie, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you want to share forward? Or if there was something that we could end our time together today in a way that would be inspiring for the listeners or for those who are watching this on video?
I would say to have the faith that you can do this, you know, that it's very, if you're just getting started, it can be easy to doubt that you can do it and to look at people who are doing it and say, oh my God, I could never do that. But I felt that way when I was first starting, and now I am doing it. And I know that other people that I've helped go through that where they were convinced they couldn't do it and now they can. So to not give up, to just know that we are in a very glorious time in history, even though there are so many terrible things happening, there's also wonderful things happening simultaneously. And one of the wonderful things that's happening is that the world is ready in a way that they haven't been in a long time to recognize the unity of all life. And one of the ways that we're maybe in different bodies and different forms, insects, birds, people, animals, elephants, giraffes, whatever it is, the form we're in, there is something that unifies us all that we all have, and that is consciousness. Yeah. And just by knowing that, we make a change by just recognizing that everything that's alive has consciousness. Consciousness is different, you know, but there are different levels of experience of it, just the same way in humans. Some humans are very conscious and some are not so conscious, but the ones that are not so conscious can learn if they choose to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. That was beautiful. That was beautiful. So I'm going to put your information in the show notes here so that everybody can go there. You can find more information about Jeannie. So we've been talking with Jeannie Joseph, and she's the author of the Human Animal Connection book. Her website is thehumananimalconnection.org. And I would love to continue this forward in some way, do some work together, see how we can bring more animals and people together, see how the animals can teach us even more.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for this time together, Jeannie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and for sharing me with your audience.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. So everybody, I wanted to send a big hug to say, until next time, bye for now.